Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
review of a musical play called Camp Dogs. And I saw that in a Wollongong theatre, and I'll give you a brief outline of what sort of thing it was, and I suppose what the give an idea of the punchline that I'm working to in this podcast. So, although a lot of you may be scientifically inclined and may have some interest in Australian culture, this is more on the interest of Australian culture end of things. So, in this particular play, it's about two Aboriginal women who are singers and have a concert process, and you follow them. It's a bit of a road trip, and they go from Sydney up to Darwin, down into the Northern Territory, into country, so to speak, and trying to get in contact with their dying mother and reconnect with their lost brother. That's the overall thing. And of course, so there's a journey, a theme to it, and there are two singers, nightclub singers or party singers. So there's a series of gigs and songs which naturally go. So it's half musical, half biographical, and it becomes sort of a artful tableau to discuss some Indigenous issues. This is about the First Nation and how Aboriginals are struggling with various aspects internally. And there's a sort of surprising twist to it. And it's surprising on many, many levels, particularly the level that I'm coming from. So you'll have to listen carefully to actually pick where the twist is, and it really starts off. The twist actually really relates to my own personal experience and the experience of you listening to this particular podcast. Now, just to put you in the picture, this is a podcast while walking, and hopefully, I have slowly improving the quality of the podcast, so you can't hear me walking as much. I've suspended the microphone and put the microphone in the right place in order to slowly get there. But you will hear as I walk to my podcasting area, as I walk through traffic and things like that, and hopefully it'll be a good thing. And the reason that I'm doing podcasting while walking is to counteract, to reconnect my brain after I suppose insult or vascular damage. I suppose it's not vascular damage, it's sort of small regions of death and dieback. And I've had to been given a general brief of just push yourself to the limit, to sort of disengage from things that are stopping you. That is the inane chaos of a workplace environment which isn't really geared, you know, they naturally have an outcome focused on meeting their specified goals, sort of becoming a bit of a circular thing. It becomes not a competition to make the goals, extend the goals, make strategic. Becomes a competition to define the goals and then define how the goals are met. And of course, obviously, if you do that, it means that you get a dislocation from reality. And as in a dislocation from reality, there's obviously no space and no time to actually work with the realistic situation that you're going to have a certain fraction of your population wanting to rehab. So they're obviously not in the business for whatever, for good or for bad, and it just means that you have to go, oh, let's organise it yourself. And here I am walking in Glenbrook, and this is in the Blue Mountains in Australia, and I look absolutely crazy. Not so crazy here because you can't actually tell I'm speaking to anyone. You have to really look at it, but I'm wearing a hat because A, I'm going a little bit bald and it's very cold, and the hat is a really stupid hat. It's a got a little moose ears on the top of it, so that's a crazy sight anyway. But the important thing here is, I suppose the important thing is, we're sort of past the age of disposable humans, disposable everything, and we've recycled it. And there's recycled, recycled, retreaded humans back in the place. And what's happened is bits of their past have been junked off, you know, chopped off. They've rebuilt themselves from scratch, and basically rebuilt themselves from scratch, and moving forward as you can. So hold on to that thought, because that's what I'm attempting to do, and this is going to come forward in a long way in this play, which I've seen in Wollongong, which is a good 140 kilometres away from here. It's sort of south on the coast. So let's have a little consideration. There's a uplifting of mountain ranges, which really extend almost unbroken from the Blue Mountains off down to the coast at sort of an angle going south. And so the cliffs, which are just in front of, about 5 kilometres in front of me, are, by the time it gets down 140 kilometres, they're just a few kilometres, and then you've got the sea. So Wollongong is nestled with these large cliffs. It's sort of a little area of coastal land, and there used to be steelworks, copper refineries, a real steel town, and that's sort of gone by, and it's reinvented itself as a university innovation cultural hub. It's still basically a surfy capital, and further up there's a sort of a road which is out on the sea. The road, they couldn't put it on the cliffs or anything like that, and so they've just built this long extended bridge through the sea, so that's quite spectacular. And further up there's a hill with one of the strongest wind systems, and it's the hang gliding centre of Australia and really the world. So like the first gliders were built in that region, and it's still there today. So you sort of look out, and it's sort of like some out of an apocalypse. All these hang gliders going hell for leather. And that's just the general idea of where Wollongong is. And how did I get here? Well, my wife's blind. It's important, and the term for blind people, which I've sort of found out, I always assume that VIP stood for very important people, and so when they're referring to a group of blind people as the VIPs, I thought they were just very important people. But it actually stands for visually impaired person. It basically doesn't say that they're deficient. Oh, I don't know. It's not the blind shock horror stuff, and it doesn't say male or female person VIP. I didn't understand it. So there's a system now in Australia that they have taken money out of governed institutions, souped it up, and given it to the actual each individual disabled person, and with a plan and an assessor, and that individual disabled person now has small money because there's not paying for as much as administration. And so say if you gave someone a can of baked beans, that can of baked beans would actually cost quite a lot because you'd have to put money in at the top and you'd have administrators and stuff like that. And finally, there'll be only a little bit left over. What they've done is changed that and they've put all the money up the front, and then the money gets dissipated as it goes upwards. But there's more value and more flexibility because each disability is slightly different. And so coming to this, there's the ability achieve, ability goals and reform them in such a way that you can spend your money incredibly wisely. And there are these companies coming up called, I suppose, disability tours. And so what that meant, it's called Cocky Tours, and what that meant is that we went into Central Station in Sydney, about 40 kilometres train track, and met up with one, two, three blind people, or three more blind people, yeah, two other blind people, with their dog, and then then this little minibus with the tour operator, because now they're combining all their money and combining all the planning. You can actually arrange these sort of beneficial things which were not previously available. So perhaps this is a success story. And we picked up two other people with two more dogs. So there were three dogs and various things. And we went to the Illawarra. So Illawarra is the name of the Wollongong area. Illawarra is the District Performing Arts Centre. Sort of a post-2000 centre. And it's really relevant here because part of this is that with this move, the local disability group, which provides voice description. So now we've got these blind people going to this play, and this voice description that's now big enough for the theatre company to put on a tactile tour. And I've actually forgotten the name of the post. There's a tactile tour before it, and then afterwards there's a sort of a lecture system, a meet the actors, meet. I really am stressing. Now, the interesting thing is, because I know I'm going to be podcasting on this, I'm recalling facts and features, structuring it. So it's actually a really good thing mentally to go in. And so catch that thought again in terms of your sort of little mental disability of memorizing things, and hopefully I'll do rather well on it. But capture that thought, because we're going to hopefully my microphone isn't bumping too much. I'm just really hoping that I've got the right sort of shock absorption idea without it, going too bad. I've put a little bit of effort into it now. So I hope this is a good podcast at the end of it. So, yeah, the idea is that there's a sub-theme of disability and how it comes in and stuff like that. So what we did is there's various things you learn about, how you look after the guide dogs, and we all had lunch together. And so you've got this interaction cross fertilization of ideas and plans, and people who have to talk about it. So it's actually quite good for people with disability to talk with each other and propagate ideas. And then we had a tour of the set, where you went on the set and you could feel various things, and various things were described. And basically the set's the inside of a bar, sort of a performance bar, and there's a few tables for the audience, you know, to be up the front, and which is, I suppose, is important. So left and right, there's two sort of pub tables, round tables where people have beers, and then there's a small table, a couch, and then a raised area of the band up the front. And and there's a blackboard in the back with various sort of standard stuff, so bingo night, $5 hamburgers, all this type of stuff written in the back, various, and then camp dogs. Now, this is an example. So that's what's there, the visual tour, and I may as well continue on it, and I'll just stop again for a while, and then there were sound checks, so the blind people had radios, and there was a person doing visual audio descriptions. Now, of course, audio description is supposed to be absolutely deadpan. It is sort of, and so-and-so has now appeared to the left of the stage and it's picking up a bottle, rather than me going, oh! And, you know, I'm doing audio description, I do it dreadfully. I say, oh, look, they've come over here. Oh, I think there's, I do it completely horribly badly. It must drive my wife insane, because she can actually pick up professional audio things, and so I tend to sort of weight it with my own reactions for seeing things for the first time. So they were really well briefed. So all these blind people up the front with their dogs, and they had various mats for their dogs to sit down. Very good. The dogs are sort of highly, highly trained, and I don't know, there's a sort of a dog culture there. And the the play begins, I think 1:30. So we had a generous lunch there, and it sort of all looked after. So it's all, everything is properly organized. And again, if you're a blind disabled person, just taking someone to a venue, letting them watch it, and then everyone else goes home, and you're sort of left, this sort of creates a bit more of an atmosphere continuity about it. Now, just before I go, it's called Camp Dogs, and there's an aggressive dog looking up there, and that's the name of the play. And just for instance, straight afterwards, I couldn't remember what the first word was. I kept on going, and there's been a series of things which I've been struggling to remember, and the memories come back to me, but I can sort of remember a bit of a letter, and then I try a few things, I really struggle, then it comes, and then once I've remembered it, in general it's locked in, like that camp dog's trying to remember the name of the show, even though it was written there heaps and heaps of times, and over, when I sort of remember it locked it away, it then appeared again, and then knowing that I had to podcast about it, I had to really go again and hold on to that thought again, because there's sort of an unfolding of it, but the unfolding will only really occur at the post play lecture. Now, that sounds awful, but a post play lecture no one would go to. It was called something else, and that again has escaped me, what that is. And so this play begins, and the two women are in a pub, an Aboriginal pub, and performers in a general pub, and there's a series of songs, and it sort of starts off as a sort of a parody of commercial gaming pubs. So this is where there's sort of rich pubs, and there's a lot of gambling money going through. And this there are two Aboriginal Siggins, or as we call black Siggins, they like to be called black. So it's called, so going to an Aboriginal community or Aboriginal land is returning to, it's called returning to country. Where are my people, brothers, there's a whole set of linguistics which are not, I suppose, appropriate. And there's, the word, certain words are like, deadly. You know, we want to be deadly. And of course this is, it sends a little bit of a shiver, but it's appropriate that, Aboriginals want to be deadly. And it's sort of, I don't know what that actually means. It doesn't mean causing, no violence or anything like that, but that the actual concept of being significant and being known. So, they're seeing, and, they sort of first direction is, there's two singers, Renee and Barbara. So, we go out, and they're essentially sisters as far as we know, and, Renee has a job singing at a casino, so she's got a 60s hairdo and sings these awful, not awful, the beautiful 60s songs. And there's some reason, the daughter comes there to, not the daughter, the sister comes there to see and has an altercation with a, one of the, audience, or engaged audience members, I'll try and say this right, and it's then acted as it escalates as the, person gives a racial slur to her, she reacts, and, then, gets kicked out, they run out, and, then the security guard goes after him. She does an imitation of the security guard, it's a gorilla banana, and then she punches up the security guard and then just drowns him in a fountain. And of course this is, you know, in real life this would be not really imagined, a small woman doing all this, but it's believable, and they're on the run, and, they have no money, they have just barely enough money to, go to their mother, who's in Darwin, and, they have some information that their mother is suffering pulmonary disease, lung disease, and they want to see the mother, and so they get enough money to fly to Darwin. Yeah, they do imitations of the airport and stuff like that, and songs as well. The band say they have a backing band, and they, you know, the backing band member says, "Oh, you know, how are we going to get there?" And there's sort of this break with reality, saying, "Oh, band members don't speak in plays." And you'll get there. You know, you'll work a way of getting there. So that's sort of a bit of a, let's go with the road trip story. And so, they sing a bit more in, in Darwin. Beautiful thing is they have them looking for their countrymen, and their countrymen are nowhere. You know, there's the question of where are they? And then, I do have to step back and say some poignant point. Where are they? They're in, and they turn up to be all in the hospital because they're all sick and malign. And so there's that question. I do have to step back, of course, because I have missed an important point. That, the Aboriginal people have said there's this thing occasionally where they're accepted as Indians.
Yeah.
And as Indians, they're more accepted than Aboriginals, and so they have this... they do a rich person's yacht thing, invited on this yacht to sing, and they do singing, and they dress up in saris and various things like this, and they sing, but they have a small altercation, not an altercation, with this Indian person saying, "Oh, I'm very attracted to you," blah blah blah, and she says, "Oh, what do you want me to sing in Indian?" And he says, "Oh, you can't just sing in Indian, because we in the subcontinent have 120 languages. There's Urdu, and there's names all the different ones, sort of like five different languages." And then she breaks out and says, "Oh, well, the indigenous people have 250 separate languages," and they do. She went in there and sang all the beautiful, the Aboriginal words are so beautiful. And I just can't describe how beautiful they are. But there's, you know, one particular long word, Aboriginal word, and she was able to change and manipulate it. It was really beautiful. And that was a beautiful point at the start of the point that we were taking, steering into progressively more Aboriginal issues. So if you sort of start first off Aboriginal issues, it's a turn off, but it starts off going to India, and there's sort of a space, safe space to talk about culture, because you're an Indian culture, Aboriginal culture, it's sort of separated from us, and then it can be driven back in over view. So that's so you've got the Australian audience, the Aboriginal stuff taken into the Indian setting, and you've got this conflict there, and then you can then drive this cultural debate further on. And as I've said, there's the so this ability to make these points, and one of the points is of the Aboriginal, I think the Aboriginal people have a lifespan 10 years less than the rest of the country, just due to their, you know, the way they're treated and stuff like that. The social cohesion, social networks, isolation, all these various things. But it does mean that there's a large interaction with the health system that we have here. And so there's this. Then they go down to Catherine. They now on these various serious things, they build up the theme of stealing. At the bridal party, they do their set, and then they go to get their drink, and they have to suddenly pay for it. The other guests haven't paid for it. They introduce this point that after you stop singing, you have to, everyone pays, and then they have the cue, and they have the sort of introduction of a bit of violence and going out cues and think and stealing. And Barbara has to get from Darwin to Catherine. And there's a sequence of where she sees an old friend who owes her something, and then gives her a tinny, which is a sort of a metal boat without board and motor. She takes it up. These Aboriginal brothers say, "Can we borrow it?" And so they borrowed it, and then she took their motorcycle, and their motorcycle's up. And there's the thing of, where did you get it from? Well, I didn't steal it. Here's this complicated sequence of social interactions, which is a sort of a window into this complicated a way that the First Nations trade and do various things. That's sort of a bit unknown to us. But the point is the idea of taking property is a little bit different. And then what did they tell the police? The idea that the Aboriginal community would use the police to settle their internal problems is anathema. And so they're able to put that sort of, in terms of lecture notes, these ideas of the number of Aboriginal languages, the number of Aboriginal sickness, the trade, the relationships, all this came out seamlessly and well structured as a sort of an education point. Now, of course, this is a play for Australia, and it's been much liked and reviewed, and in a sense it has various things, and we sort of discussed afterwards going home that this particular person who was cited, the tour guide, said, oh look, they had the words written up, and I must admit, when I was listening, I couldn't really follow all the words, and the point I made was that it's unlike the Andrew Lloyd Webber, where the plot reaches a certain point and you have to sing yourself way to the next thing. It's not like the French Annalise Reva, where I'm here and I want to really build up a certain mood. I'm going to have a mood-changing song which will take me to the next part of the plot. So the songs were atmospheric and similar to songs which we have in a modern-day world. They just all flood in and we listen, we take them, we take what we want from them. They're not integral to a storytelling plot. Although these songs were there. So the words were artistic and poetical. And so there are certain things like, I don't know, I obviously picked up the word science and maths in one of the songs, and it would be hard to actually, they're not, you know, they're atmospheric songs, which thank goodness are not sort of, you know, foot-tapping songs or rousing songs. They're just, you know, relevant songs going through. So we're coming along, and there's a bit of a story that extended family that it's the natural mother of Renee, but she's the actual auntie of Barbara. And what's happened is that there's been some sort of tragedy to Barbara's mother early on in life, and the father gives the two children to be picked up, and at a certain stage the father comes along to take the mail away, and to come, and he said, I'll come back for you when I'm ready, and she never comes back, and he eventually dies, and the brother is lost. But the dying mother wants to see the brother before he dies, so they have a mission to go and find this particular brother. And there's a series of things about the mother dying, and there's a thing that the daughter gets involved with some drinking Aboriginals, and gets drunk and attacks, gets put in a police paddy wagon and spends the night without a phone. This gets disconnected by the police, and it's in there, and the anger, you can imagine all these things are happening and the anger is building up, and this Barbara has stolen this, bashed this person, you know, this is pretty amazing stuff, and it's all building up, and you can feel it, and there's certain things, the sort of things are talked through about you white people only worried about us stealing your land because you've stolen it in the first place. That's why you're feeling insecure. And it's sort of this beautiful patchwork of, you know, how could you fit so many concepts and ideas all built into it? And this will come out in the post the lecture coming out, because you're trying to pick it. And I must admit, I'm by that stage quite going through it. I was really struggling with fatigue. I'd sort of worked the night before, trying on this programming up to 1 o'clock in the morning, just not getting anywhere with this program. So it was late and just a wee bit tired through the whole thing, but still picking up as much as I can, trying to store things away. So the mother, the Barbara's in the lockup, the mother dies, she comes out, this, oh crap, I've missed it. Well, I'll go out to this place, and there's a story that they can find the brother quite surprisingly quickly, because the Aboriginal community is surprisingly connected, and there are instances all the time that I know of this connection. It's a surprising connection. Everyone knows certain things. There's gatekeepers and there's ways to go through. And so even if you're well-meaning from outside the culture, you won't get very far. You have to wait to be asked to be helped. It's one of those things. You can't go and help them. You have to be there. And at a certain point, you'll be asked. And that's, you know, that's you're privileged to help. But, you know, that really goes through all aspects of the community. And now there is this thing of male-female separation and initiation systems and different... Oh, there's so many different things happening. There's your group, your mob, but there's also skins. Something called skins. And it's a complicated system that you can only marry someone from a different skin. And what this means is that it keeps the genetic diversity pretty high, because it rotates individual clans around and you get intermarriage between the different clans within. Oh, it's something that I've thought I understood. It's intensely mathematical. It's by the law. So there's this idea of skins and stuff like that. So you've got all these different things happening. So a very ancient, but very effective culture. And one of the things that I think is missing is, one of the things I do think has built up in European and other cultures is this huge fear within the actual culture itself, and this is fear of belonging and stuff like that. My belief is that in Australia there's no large predatory animals, and if you're kicked out, you're not going to be eaten by anything. There's nothing to fear. There's no savanna predators around, and so I don't know, it's a great degree of cooperation, whereas in Western cultures, this corruption of the mind due to fear of being exclusion. So you are so frightened of being excluded, you are not strong, never strong enough to think for yourself. So the ultimate thing is that you will be put away from the campfire, and there's this real fear of being excluded, put away, because you will probably die, be eaten by something. And so you can see this behavior in Australian animals. Which has sort of come due to the lack of large, there used to be marsupial lions and stuff like that, but they've gone out. As the continents dried up, there's no large groups of herbivores which can be preyed upon. So when man walked in, the actual man was walking with prey, you know, being preyed on. He didn't camp. So I really think there's change the structure. That's my overall view. I'm not trying to be... I'm trying to actually think my way into what is going on. And so you've got this play with a lot of energy and singing and anger and dynamism, and all throughout the play there is a male sound mixer on this stage all the time. And I'm just trying to say, with the community, people keep track of who everyone is and where they're related to within it. You know, you're related to whom and stuff like that. And so very easily they can say, oh, well, we know exactly where that person is. He's over there. Here I am. And he speaks in this, I think it's Terry or Trevor. I think it must be Terry or something like that. Comes along, tuba hat, and speaks in this very calm, level voice, and says, you know, we have to be who we are and work through the present. And just this beautiful, you know, you've got this play where all these things are up in the end, and you know, Andrew Lloyd Webber and Shakespeare will try and structure it down and try and resolve it, have everyone die or some very obvious thing. But here there's a personality and a presence, an ethereal presence, which just grounded everything. And this person here stood very quietly and said, I'm the brother. I know where it is. Well, let's proceed with life from now on. And there were certain aspects of wisdom which suddenly came through because it's at a different level. So I'd say you were all tuned into reaching these fairly highly complex things, and there was a more, let's take on from where it is and go ahead. And that, obviously that's connected to me a little bit in terms of I was trying all these things and making barriers. And of course, obviously, the harder you push, the harder things push back against you. And so it's a tug of war. You're pushing against society. And you get this feeling there in the play they were pushing against society. And society is wrong for very good reasons. Now, so this male actor was very... And they sang trios together and they just brought it all to conclusion. That was all very sort of thought-provoking, with, you know, there are open questions in Australian society, but there has to be resolution there. It wasn't, by any way, stretch of means, feel good. However, there was a solution there. The camp dogs ended, and there was a feeling of profundity amongst the audience, because the issues that were important, that were under the surface, were tripped, like drawn out. Sort of, you can't bring it directly, or we'll draw it here, draw it here, and it's sort of like leading the idea. And it's unacceptable at this form, but here we take it along, and we turn and reflect it, and we have these... this beautiful thing, and there's this enormous pride in fellow Australians staking out their bit of Australia. I don't know, they may not like saying that, but there's sort of great pride in people working out where they are, what's going on, and kicking forward. And after this, a bit of effort getting out of the cinema with the three dogs and stuff like that. We settle up on the post lecture from the producer, the sort of the major producer, the original producer, and this man, the third actor. And it comes that the actual producers leading the conversation about, so they're sitting up there on stools, and it's sort of a bit of a lecture theatre afterwards, and it's a fairly common thing in actual fact. Sort of like once in every 10 plays there's a discussion between the producer, the actors and the audience. We come along. So that's the way it happens in Australia. I'm sure it happens everywhere else around the world. However, I suppose the executive producer or the original producer, said that she was Maori, and she came over to be a musician at 19, full Maori, and she worked as a music producer for to empower women. So this is a really important thing, and First Nations stuff like that, and the actual actor who was Barbara had done all these things and said, you know, she was really frustrated by the roles she was given as a black woman. She wanted to do something else, and then they challenged her to develop something. And over 6 months working, she developed something with a team, and it's up to an in-house showing with friends and critical audience and producers. And then it went on for possibly another year, and then it was adopted by a theatre company, and they put in more expertise, more experts, swapped in experts and things like that, and songwriters and stuff like that. And over 4 or 5 years, this developed from not, well, there was a story there, but there was a passion to get certain things on the table. And they did it. It's a brilliant way to see it was come across. And then the other actor there was sort of revealed himself in little bits and pieces, and he was saying things. He continued to be pretty similar to the way that he was acting there, that personality came across. So things like, you know, you've only got one chance at the dance, and little bits of stories of how he's one of 10 children, and various things, and he sort of said, you know, he was a basketball player. He sort of happenstance to he showed by accident his mother overheard him and his friends singing along, and he went to school at Stedford's, and then it just blossomed that way. And he said that he was a champion. They said he was a champion dart thrower, and he was. And he said, "Oh, it's the spear." So I'm just getting that angle that of the Aboriginal thing, and he talked about skin name, Aboriginal language, relearning the Aboriginal language, things like that. This is really powerful, and they in the actual play they said. This particular actor had been, there's a notorious child detention centre in Australia, which I think has been closed down or revamped, called Dondale. He was in Dondale there. And little by little he said, I've now gone into music, and I've given up, my parents were really strict, no alcohol, stuff like that. And all this is to the English, to the, Western years, this is important. Oh, this is really, these people, you know, they're really trying the best. And then he once they said, "Oh, I've now given up all drugs and alcohol and stuff like." Oh, that's a bit like that. And then a little bit further on, you're listening, trying to decode what's going on. He said, "Oh, and I've had 2 heart attacks and strokes," and they're like kabang. I sort of understood the chance, one chance at the dance, restructure, like a stroke is like a little taste of death, coming into, to visit you, and, you can either be in mourning, or you can be a celebration of, what's left, and, that sort of stroke learning, something that is pretty amazing to see it transfer across. And it's one aspect I think other people listening didn't, I sort of said, look, this person's really got this really connected attitude I can really relate to. And it wasn't until I actually went to the post theatre lecture that this glimmer came out, and I said, oh, instantly I sort of know, and I sort of know people with strokes, and they read things out, and I almost give them a round of applause being able, for what they can do. It's sort of like, for me, I'm a unique new audience, people who appreciate people doing things with strokes. So I think that's absolutely amazing. So there you have it. I don't know how long I've talked for it, but there's the amazing story of different attitudes to disability, creating a different venue from people. So where people are no longer just isolated consumers, they're coordinated consumers, supported consumers, going in on a deeper level, and goes across there. And then the idea of I wasn't expecting to see it, and it didn't come out. There was this sort of a feeling going through, and it's sort of very important to go across. But the reveal at the end that the potential resolution of things is this recycling of humans. This idea that it's really tough. We have been rejected. We've been pushed off. But now it's recycle time. Thanks a lot for listening. Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.